This is Betsy Kulikowski, author of the Veritas Codex series, and you're listening to Ghost in the Valley podcast.
Okay, welcome to the show, Tony Shapiro. Can't tell you how excited I am having you on the show today. I can really relate to you. We both had a haunted experience as a child, growing up in haunted houses. We both are finishing up our books based on our real life adventures. Before I take you back to those chilling times, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing these horrific moments. That is encouraging. It takes courage to come on and talk about these things because, as you know as well as I do, you're labeled crazy, nuts, psycho, whatever, whatever these labels they put on us. Mm-hmm. And like you said in our private conversation, that it was different times back in the 60s, different times back then than it is today. We have social media we can go to, and it wasn't like that back then. So I really, really want to thank you for coming on and sharing your stories with me. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first, let me thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. And I'm really, really looking forward to discovering, you know, each other's stories and such. And sometimes when I talk about them, others pop up that I will all of a sudden remember. You probably go through that as well. But anyway, a little bit about me. You know, my name is Tony Shapiro. I'm 64 years old, and it took 60 years before I started sharing these encounters openly. And it really, with the encouragement of so many friends on social media, I mean, it was difficult at first. And first there were blogs of my, and I just really had to wait and make sure I could trust this person. Because as you said, growing up in the 60s, we didn't talk about this stuff. And I came from a family of all women. My father had passed in 1959. So I had my mother, my grandmother, who was my dad's mother, and my sister, and all four of us have had paranormal encounters. So it's probably something, I'm learning all the time that it's inherited. You know, it could be a family trait, and who knows how many generations it went back from there. I don't know. But not growing up with a man, I didn't have that kind I didn't have that connection with men. So
you released your blog, My Paranormal Encounter. This was published in the American Paranormal Press magazine last month. I mean, you sent me that blog. I'm like, I was blown away. So let's start with that. Let's go back to that night, that chilling night. When you were only 7 years old, correct?
No, I was four.
4 years old. I got that wrong.
Four. Wow. Okay. No, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay.
You're 4 years old. Wow. What a traumatic experience for any child. I mean,
yeah.
And I know myself, I was 12, so I was a little older than you, but man, 4 years old. Let's go back to that night.
Well, you know, at 4 years old, you can't even imagine, you know, how to explain anything like this to mom or grandma or anybody for that matter. And for me, after it happened and the time it happened as well, I felt like this was life. And how do you change a child's innocent mind at 4 years old? I mean, you're changed. You know, how does this happen? And nobody in my family spoke of such things. It wasn't until later on in life that my grandmother would tell me, some of her encounters, my sister as well, my mother also, but then she didn't believe in it, even though she actually seen things, you know, that she could describe. But anyway, so that night I woke up, I could just feel this energy, and I'm closest to the corner of the wall. the corner of the entrance, that would have been the wall closest to me, to the bedroom. And my mother is on the other side of me. Most nights I liked sleeping with my grandmother. My sister would rather sleep with mom. But this night I slept with my mother instead. And it's just one of those feelings. It's a feeling that I've had quite often when I know that there is something there and it's staring at me. And what I really don't enjoy is having to see it. But I'll digress. That night I just woke up. I looked over to the corner because I was facing that way. And there was this little boy. He's like, I guess I would say maybe age 7, something like that. He just stood there. And he didn't really look like any of the other children in the neighborhood, but it wasn't like I was frightened by him. I was more curious to see him. And of course, we never spoke a word. I just laid there staring at this little boy like, oh, hi. And what are you? I don't know if I thought so much, what are you doing in my bedroom, as much as I was just curious, why are you here? You know, not so much like, get out, you know, nothing like that. Because children don't think like that. We don't think like that when we're little. It's just like, oh, wow, somebody's come to play with me or something. But, you know, as he stood there, no words were ever spoken. It was as though we were transcending the conversation without speaking. This poor darling, he, as I said, he didn't look like little boys in my neighborhood because of his color, you know, his coloring, you know, and I don't remember him having any kind of hair, but he had the most saddest expression on his face, and his eyes were a little bit larger than, I guess, what I would call normal. But his brows were so furrowed and like just so sad and devastated. And I remember laying there and just thinking, this is breaking my heart. You know, I didn't know how to fix him. I didn't, you know, and I didn't know what to think of it. Seeing that kind of expression as he just stared at me, I have to kind of close my eyes so I can visualize it all again. I laid in the bed and he stood there in that corner just staring at me. It was like he was either begging for help or begging for forgiveness. I you know, today it's I can only go back and see this as a movie and in my mind. And so that's how I finally, after 60 years, was able to describe it. But I remember everything about that house. I mean, honestly, every nook and cranny, everything about it, you know, the whole layout and everything. Anyway, and I stared for quite a while, it seemed, you know, and you can't, you know, conceive of time when you're that little anyway. But it felt like quite a long time. And in just a moment's notice, I mean, like not even notice, it seemed like there was this opening, and perhaps, you know, I'm learning some of these things from other podcasters and friends and such that I've met on social media, that perhaps this little boy was actually, you know, holding that opening where that, like a vortex, and it can stay open. You know, the veil was lifted or thin. I don't have all the technical words for this stuff yet because I'm only learning to understand myself. But outstepped from behind him was this skeletal man. And I mean, he was literally a skeleton with the biggest blue eyes, bulging blue eyes. And I was instantly terrified. I didn't feel that way with this child spirit. I didn't feel that way at all with the child spirit, but I was instantly terrified by him. As he stepped out from behind him from that corner, he just looked at me with this like he was so pleased with the look on my face. And the second that he walked out, my heart just started to race like insanely. And I froze because I had never seen anything like that. We never watched spooky movies or anything at all. You know, it was a pretty well, you know, rounded little childhood. After that, no, nothing was the same. But anyway, as he came back, he walked out and stepped out from behind the boy. My immediate attention was completely on him. I, you know, for fear of like, what is this? What's happening? And I couldn't move. I was almost petrified, and all I could do is try to breathe. It was like instant anxiety. A child to have anxiety at 4 years old is pretty nuts. Gosh, I couldn't even catch my breath to scream. And I remember later thinking, I wish I would have woken my mother up. But anyway, so he came, as he came out, my eyes were just fixed on him, and then I turned to see if the little boy was there, like, what is this, but he was gone. He had disappeared. And this entity moved in kind of a, I can't describe it any other way, but it was kind of a weird strobe-like manner. I could see every bit of him from head to toe, from my edge of the bed. And as he looked at me, he again, his grin just seemed to be getting wider and wider, and his enthusiasm, and he was just elated with the way he was terrorizing me. And he stepped over to a cabinet that I kept all of my art supplies. Let me back up for a second. I started kindergarten at 4 years old. So I had already had, little tiny, those little school type scissors that had the round edges, for to cut out little My Little Dolls and coloring books and all of these types of art supplies that I used to keep ritually. I mean, never deviated from this practice. Every day they went back into this cabinet that was at the opposite corner of the room. And he just opened one side of the cabinet doors and reached in. And I'm still just laying there, it's so terrified, not knowing what is going on. And as he reached in, he turned to look at me to make sure he still had my attention, as if I'm going to turn around. And I mean, I was hyperventilating. I was trying to breathe. I was trying to breathe just enough to scream. That was not happening. He pulled the scissors out of the cabinet and came toward me with a clipping motion, like snap, snap, snip, that type of thing. And finally, I was able to get enough air that I could scream. Well, this is a little tiny voice. It's not going to carry much sound. But from that, I was able to shuffle up over my mother and huddle against her, crying and screaming. I mean, this was devastating, devastatingly scary. I had never seen anything like it. And I'm crying and crying and screaming. My mother's, wondering, like, what is going on? She was so worried because I'd never displayed any kind of behavior like that in my life. And I huddled as close as I can get to her with the blanket over my head, and crying, and between gasps of crying and screaming and just whimpering. I had thought that as long as at the time took, maybe he would be gone. So I was under the covers and against my mother's body, and she's holding me tightly, thinking maybe, okay, she is she sick? Is there, anything like that? But she had to give me time to calm down. She didn't ju just jump right out of bed right away. She just held me first, and I lifted the blanket just the tiniest bit, just enough to get my face peeked out from the from underneath, and there was that horrible face, as close as maybe 5 inches from mine, snipping those scissors. Well, let me tell you, that was another scream. And this time I think I bellowed even louder. My mother jumped up, and then she turns on the light to check to see, what happened to me. Was I maybe bitten by a spider or something? Anything. I didn't have a fever or anything like that. And she checked me over real well. By this time, my grandmother and my sister come rushing in, and of course the whole house is all awake, and everybody's just terror. They're terrified as well because they don't know what happened to Tony. Because she's so little, what happened to her? And once my mother was certain that everything was okay, she went ahead and checked me over real well. My sister and I switched bedrooms, so I went back to grandma's room, or into grandma's room, which is was my favorite place to be anyway. So the next morning, I just laid in grandma's bed crying, and she held me and comforted me, And I'm giving you the short version here as much as I can. And the next morning, I had to go into my mother's room to get my shoes. You know, getting ready for school. And I walked in there and it just gingerly walked in and just cautiously. And I'm my little face is darting around all over the room, you know, wondering where could he be? Is he going to be here again? And of course, mother was already at work, but grandma was there to take me to school. Anyway, I started to look around the bed where my shoes should have been, but they weren't there, which was quite honestly odd. I can't tell you what happened to those shoes. They had to be somewhere else. Then walk back around the side of the bed where I was now in front of my mother facing the opposite wall. And I looked down and those scissors were on the floor exactly where that monster would have had them.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I've had so many other encounters, but I've never had one like that. I've had a lot of encounters since, and I've even had a malevolent attack. But as far as being able to recall everything so well, nothing is like that one.
Well, I mean, when I got that blog, I'm like, wow. And then you sent the cover, the picture that you drew. I could almost feel what you were talking about when you sent that picture. That was astounding. I mean, that had to be hard to do to design that cover. And it takes you still back to that time, even though it was many, many years ago, you know, reliving that time all over again.
It was really, really hard for me to do. That's why, I guess, maybe why it had taken so long. In all of my life, I don't think I was closest to my grandmother more than anybody in my life. And I don't think I'd ever explained it to her. I never told my mother either. My sister, I gave her bits and pieces, but she's passed away since. And I had maybe four close people that I explained it to. One was my son, and the other was, I believe, my ex-husband. So again, with my sister, maybe bits and pieces, and with my husband today. You know, there's not a whole lot of people that, you know, you want to talk to about this stuff to. If they don't share first, I'm not going to open it. I'm not going to just start, hey, guess what happened to me when I was little? Because, you know, it's hard enough to when you're a child and then you're in your teens and you're trying to be accepted. That's the last thing you want to talk about to people because nobody did talk about it, you know.
Right. When I was about to, you know, same thing. Who do you share this with when you're a child? Because my experience, almost the same as yours. Who do you talk to? Because during the 5 years we lived in this haunted house, my mother and father never experienced it. You know, so my sister, myself, a few other people, it's in my book. And every time I bring it up, every time I try to talk to them about it, I would be grounded, you know, for talking crazy or.
Oh.
So, you know, in my book, it comes out like maybe my mother was kind of cruel and mean, but she wasn't.
No.
She didn't understand. And I always say this, if you never experienced in your life cancer, Alzheimer's, you really don't know. Mm-mm. You really, and paranormal experiences, it's the same. If you never experienced a situation, that's why I love this show, because I have people like yourself come on, and there's somebody out there who can relate with you. And you, it's like you sometimes think, who can I share this with? Who can I talk to this? You wouldn't believe the people out there that can relate to you. I can relate to you.
It's amazing. We have our tribe, and it's so liberating now. It's like, wow, where has this been? You know, because
right.
I just, you know, I barely started going on social media maybe like two and a half years ago. And then I started with X Twitter, and, you know, and then I went from there to Facebook and such. And Facebook has only been like maybe 6 months, if that, because it still gives me anxiety.
Right. I mean, I was going to get that. You feel like today when you're looking back on that. You looked at it different as a 4-year-old back then. I mean, now you're looking back at it as an adult, and maybe you see things differently that you wish you would have seen then. I mean, like myself, I'm writing my book. I'm looking at things. I'm reliving, like you are, the what happened. And sometimes my sister says, I don't remember it that way. Or hit me, you know, there was more than one, you know, spirit in that house that I grew up
yeah.
in. Well, anyway, do you feel that this demonic being,
I want to call him demonic,
killed that little boy?
I honestly do. I've been just recently, I've been in contact with historical society that is in that area. You want to hear something that's really kind of interesting. This is brand new to me by 2 days. I've contacted the historical society. Now I'm going to just go ahead and say this happened in Southern California, but and in the area of Orange County, which is my where I lived was Anaheim. There is right now the there are so many societies that can give you information. I'm on newspapers .net or .com. I have to look at it, but anyway, that can give me newspaper clippings from way back when starting. I think it goes continuous up until like 18 or 19 something. I can't remember. I have all of my notes, but I'm looking for newspaper articles that are prior to 1959, to whom might have lived there. That area in itself, I always thought it was only orange groves, but it wasn't. Prior to orange groves, there was grape vineyards, but the grape vineyards got some sort of infection or disease, and they wound up dying off. Thereafter, they went ahead and planted orange groves. Now, that area was purchased by German immigrants, George Hansen, and he had never married, but he had an adopted son. I'm trying to remember his name. I know his last name is Solano, something like that. Anyway, in my research, I found that the original area. And I was with it, our house was within the boundaries of this area that was marked off called the Four Gates of Anaheim. Well, you can imagine what I thought, four gates of you know what.
Right.
Yeah, there was there there it there are perimeter it's perimetered by four what they called four gates of Anaheim, north, south, east, and west. Now, right now with the Mazio Historical Society of Anaheim, they're going to provide. She's the very nice lady there is going to provide some of the information for me on that. There's only one plaque that I could see where one of the gates was, and it was Anaheim Boulevard. Well, we weren't far from Anaheim Boulevard, and I believe that was the southern gate. And another gate was near what was called Los Angeles Street at the time, which was renamed Lincoln Street. And then I'm trying to remember, I think the other gate is at the at South Street or West Street. There was two other streets that might have had their names changed as well. There's one gate I'm still waiting to hear about what it's called. But when you start to do the research, and I wasn't sure that I even wanted to do research on this. Do I want to know? And what could I do? Because obviously, one of the things that really breaks my heart even today, and I find it so devastating, that little boy, if he was killed, and I really believe he was, I mean, my heart just absolutely believes it. He could have been a little farmhand. He could have been a runaway, but in my gut, I feel like he was a relative. I feel like he was a relative. And that part really hurts me a lot. The house was really old. I said, in my article, I said 100 years had to be at least 100 years old. It might have not been that. I might have been 75, but 25 years between that doesn't make a whole lot of difference. I'm going to get the actual historical date it was built, and I'm hoping to get who, as I said, who owned it, who owned that land, because all the little houses that were around it did not exist at the time because they were modern. They were modern for 1960s, you see, or 1950s. But that house was very old, with even the direction that it faced didn't face the same direction as the other houses. The other houses faced each other. It was like what they call a courtyard. You might be familiar with that. It's like a courtyard community. It's got a dead end there, but it's just a little community. All those houses faced inward, where ours faced north and south. And I mean by that is the front entrance. Our house was fitted with skeleton keys and locks. Our house had wood floors and one concrete slab that you went, you had to step up a couple steps to get into the house. Our house had a garage that had like barn doors. You know, it was completely opposite to these small, modern looking little green cottages that had attached garage doors. Uh-huh. Or garages, excuse me. And, that in itself is just odd, the way it sat. And if it's in these so-called four gates, I might just be taking this out there to a whole new level, but something about reading that gave me like major anxiety. You know how when you feel that thing, you're going, oh my gosh, I'm getting closer. Something is coming. I'm going to reveal something. Do I want to know it? I kind of do. But now that the house has been demolished, I mean, I honestly, yesterday was saying to my husband, I want to fly to Anaheim now, not particularly Anaheim, but in Orange County or LA, and go to that site. I mean, I wish there was a medium or somebody who could help this child move on. You know, I believe he's trapped.
I feel exactly the same. I mean, my story is so similar to yours. That when we pulled in the driveway, there was a little girl in the window. So I related to that little girl until the day we moved out. I mean, there was no word like you. There was no word spoken, but there was the apparition. And the house like yours is no longer there, burned down. I can still go drive by that house today and I get the chills. Like something's there.
Something devastating happened there.
Yeah. So I was just curious if you would still get that feeling if you went back there.
Oh my goodness. I know I would be scared. I mean, in my opinion, if something that horrific and that evil can just travel through dimensions to terrorize me, let me tell you, what else could he do? What else would he be capable? And who else did he terrorize before us or before me, actually? I mean, who else lived in that house prior to my family? You know, there's no telling. And one of the ladies that I spoke to, another podcaster, she mentioned, it may not actually even have anything to do with the house itself. It could just be the land.
Exactly.
That spot right there.
Exactly.
You know,
it's not the house. It's the land. So was there a traumatic death in that house before?
Exactly.
You moved in, maybe that child, like you were saying, trying to get some type of court records or documents of who lived in that house prior to your moving in. Like when we moved out, my landlord told my mother, because my mother said, we claimed we seen ghosts in the house, and she was laughing about it. You know, I remember this to this day. I remember the landlord telling my mother there's a little girl that hung herself in that house.
She hung herself?
That's what, and I'm trying to get back to the records of this house, and I can't find that. I can't find that being true. And my sister doesn't think that's true, but I think something happened there. So it's hard to get records of a house that no longer exists, especially in my area. So I'm going through the library and going back and through the documents of even phone books. Back, and I would get the name of somebody. Back then they gave who lived in the house and what your occupation was in a phone book, so I'm getting some information that way. I can relate to a lot that you're saying, the trauma of just driving by that area, or what was there before you.
Right. And I feel for you too, because the fact is that what other people have told me about myself, that I never even thought about it, but that I had that I was psychic or psychic sensitive, or there are so many different theories about what it could be, and I've looked for answers, but not necessarily of that. I've never given myself a label, just that these things are attracted to me. And they opened my eyes at 4 years old, and like you at 12, So if you've got that feeling that that is what happened to that little girl, it's likely you're right. As I mentioned, newspapers, let me find that. I'll look for that article for you. Now, and I'm going to send you this link, because this is one of the outlets that the Historical Society had suggested for me, because of course I didn't tell them what I'm investigating. I didn't want to say that, because that
I'll get a story exactly like mine from Australia, from New Zealand, and it's mm-hmm. it's astounding of what's out there. But anyway, if you don't mind, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
Sure.
The legend has it, in early 1900, a young lady was raped, murdered, and hung under the Hogback Bridge in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. To this day, if you drive up to the bridge after midnight, leave your keys on the bridge, after 5 minutes, your car will not start. A green light will come up from underneath the bridge. The ghost of the murdered girl is in the back seat of your car. This and many other stories can be found on Ghosts in the Valley podcast, available on iTunes and all other downloaded sites. Okay, before the break, you said that you had a malevolent attack.
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain that?
Sure. I can give you one more incident, if you'd like, concerning the first house. I was probably about, I don't know, 7, maybe 9. I don't know how old I was, quite honestly, probably 7 or 9, something like that. I had a girlfriend from school come and spend the night, back in the days when kids had sleepovers, a lot of sleepovers. And my mother had rolled out the living room bed. It had a sleeper in it. And she rolled that out. And that couch was close to the fireplace. There was a fireplace on the right. If you walk through the front door, there was a huge fireplace to the right that nearly took up an entire wall. We had the TV in front, the opposite wall of that couch. And, like little girls do when they have a sleepover, you're giggling and laughing, and we had the TV on, and my mother came in and she turned the TV off. It was time to go to sleep. The house itself only had 2 bedrooms, and there was a Jack and Jill restroom in between the 2 rooms. And my mom left a light on in the house so that my little friend could go to the bathroom when she needed to. And of course, you don't share we didn't share this stuff with our friends. I wasn't going to start. So we're laying in the bed, but I was on the closest side to the fireplace, and the pathway there was really narrow. So I let my little friend lay where it's an open area where she could just go to the restroom if she needed to. And we're kind of facing each other, starting to doze off, and she dozed off before me. Again, one of those feelings. I felt something staring, something next to me, and I didn't want to open my eyes, knowing now that, what I had seen. I certainly didn't want to open my eyes. But there was only 2 incidences in this house, so I could feel something next to me, next to the bed. As I turned anyway to look for just an instant, and this huge dark figure, he just came out of the fireplace, and he's basically leaning over me and looking at me, and he's just enormous. I mean, tall, and especially to a little person, and he's really tall. He stared, and I can't give you an idea what the face looked like, because it was more like a cloaked dark black entity. Say maybe it was a spirit, I don't know, dark spirit thing. I'm trying to think of the word for it. I get a little tongue-tied when I start talking about this, because it brings me back to this point where it makes me kind of nervous. But anyway, dark shadow figure, that's what I was trying to think of. And it was just enormous. And he walked around the bed from my side, stood at the foot of the bed, and kind of, you could just tell that he was looking at us. And I'm petrified, and I'm not about to wake up my friend, because I figure nobody else in the house has ever seen these things in this place. Why would I tell her, wake up, look? Besides, I didn't want to lose my friendship. Then he paused there at the foot of the bed, went around towards her side of the bed, and started to lean over her side of the bed. So, that's what he was doing. He was just checking us out in his own way, looking at us. And again, as I said, it wasn't exactly bright in the room, but it was bright enough, with the light on left for my friend to go to the restroom, that I could see that there was this mass. And then I can't tell you how long it might have lasted, this observation that he was having over us, but maybe 3 minutes, maybe two only. But then he just simply kind of walked a little bit away from the bed, her side of the bed, and it was like a big dark hole just seemed to start at the bottom and open up wider and wider and wider, and he just descended. That was it. That was the only other one there.
That was in the same house as the first one?
Same house. Of course, I was scared, but certainly not like what I had encountered at 4 years old, because I know that every detail of these entities' faces. I know every detail of their body. I know exactly, you know, it's so vivid. As I said, it's like a movie
right.
that goes on, you know, just mm-hmm. plays in your mind. And, you know, as years go by, you think, what was that? You can't help it. It's going to always be there. It's going to always be there. My next encounter was, it seems every single house I have lived in, I have had an encounter. Next house I lived in was, now this one wasn't as bad. This was the house that we lived in after that house on Lincoln Street was condemned because of an earthquake. It caused, you know, significant damage to the structure itself, and it caused a roof or overhead. Mm-hmm. It caused that to crash to the ground or crash to the cement. So cement porch. So the house had to be condemned and it had to be torn down. Eventually we moved to another house again in Anaheim, still within those four gates that I mentioned before, the gates of Anaheim. We were still in that vicinity, and this house, you know, I was 11 years old when we moved there. A couple of times it had a basement, and the basement was a dirt basement, you know, really dank and damp and creepy in my opinion. And we had an attic too. In a portion of the basement, you could actually stand up, and then a lot of the basement towards the perimeter of the inside part, it was just weird. There were these, they almost looked like they were planters for plants or growing vegetables. Is almost like a raised area. And again, that's dirt. This house is definitely, I could give you the actual date of it, but I know it was definitely 75 years old. Again, another old house, mm-hmm. but sturdier. And it was one of the very first houses built in that area. There used to be this lady that she was an aviator. She'd fly planes and stuff. She had actual aerial pictures of that house, of our house there, when she would fly over and show nothing but orange groves for who knows how many miles around. So that house had been there for a very long time. And as you know, I mean, hey, history has shown us that, you know, anything can happen when there's mm-hmm. nothing around. I don't want to live in desolate areas where I don't have neighbors. You know, that's just my thing. But my sister, my cousin, and myself have had this happen in that house. My sister's was when she was pregnant. Because we lived there from 1971, and I moved out because my mother, another house had been built later on that property that was used for, not that we had servants, but that's what it was. The original house was already there, and then later a servant's quarters was built. Not of our doing, but it, you know, that's just what came later. And of course, that was when all the orange groves started diminishing, you know, getting, you know, taken out in here. And you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Farmland was no longer farmland. It was commercial and things like that. But in that house, I had several times I had sleep paralysis. And to me, you know, everybody has their own theory about that. But for me, it's like something is holding me down, literally trapping I can't move my arms. I can't move my legs. I can't speak. It held me down. Now I grew up in the church. My first resource in my mind and in my heart is pray. And that's what I've done all my life. And that's what I will continue to do. And it's for me, eventually, once, you know, I'm done with my prayer, it stops and releases me. It's just the weirdest thing. And what happened to my sister is when she was pregnant, she had her ankles yanked. She could feel two hands grab her ankles and pull her. There was nobody in the room. There was nobody in that bedroom. My cousin Renee had a similar occurrence where her ankles were yanked. That never happened to me. But many years later, and as I said, I probably had about four, five sleep paralysis episodes there, and even in the daytime, for goodness sakes. Once I was praying throughout the house, and I literally could hear just like wild animal screams coming from the basement, coming from the basement heater. There was a heater vent that, in the old houses, it had, this house too had wood floors, and the old heater vents, you could stand over them. And
Radiator heat,
And as I went by that area, and I'm, as I said, I'm praying aloud, and because I'm feeling pretty anxious about whatever's in that house, and I could hear these screams that were the highest pitched screams, and certainly not like they were animalistic, but they weren't animals. There was nothing trapped in that basement, nothing. And I always remembered feeling so scared and so nervous about going down that basement. And once I started to go down to the basement, and I just turned right back around because just that feeling tells you, get out of here, get out of here. You don't want to be here. In that house is my thought that perhaps somebody is actually either buried in underneath that house in those what could have been actually graves and not planters for vegetables or plants, but graves. I don't know, but that's just what I feel now and what I felt then. So there's that. Again, who knows? When there's only orange groves for miles around, you never know what could have happened. I had three, and one more thing that happened there. I had five dogs at the time, and they were laying on the grass in the back. This I took a picture of these dogs, and I used to have that picture in the last house, last house that I owned. I don't know what happened to it, this picture, but in this picture there were three, what just there were the five dogs just laying there, and there were three like cylinder like this is no way this could have been camera weird or light weird or anything like that. There's no way this could have been, because it was one, this it was like an entity was standing right above or right next to one of the dogs, and then the other dog, and then the other dog. The strangest thing is each one of these dogs died within a very short time of each other. They're the only ones that did. And I had a photograph of that. I wish I would have kept that guarded a little bit better. But quite honestly, it creeped me out. I didn't want to see it. It's not like today. People love to take photographs of stuff. I don't want to. And when I see something, I never think, oh, grab a camera. I just like, oh, I just don't want this to be happening. But from that house, my mother had passed away. I lived in Louisiana. I moved to Louisiana for a very short time, about a year. And while I was there, she had passed away. In Louisiana, of course, you're going to see some crazy things. And I did nothing that actually came at me. And of course, nobody else seen it. But after she passed away, I moved back to California and I purchased a house in Riverside County. And there's just a little small house, just 900 square feet, something like that. It was built in, I want to say 1936 or 32. It's one of those dates. It had updated with different windows. I mean, they did a whole change in this house before he sold it, this gentleman. Really cute little house. I loved that place. And the garage was added on. In addition to that, there was another room that was added on. So a lot of renovation was done in this house. Now the back room was really big. It was like the length of the house, which big. I mean, we were still only talking about 900 square feet now, and that includes that add-on. So it was much smaller when it was original. And then the garage from that bedroom. And I used to use that room for my ma for as the, my master room, because it was bigger. I had you know, it was and more modern. Well, I fell in love with this house when I first saw it. Never felt anything bad about it, nothing. And I absolutely don't even know why I did this, but one night, me and my dog Bonnie, I had a collie at the time. I had her for 14 years. And I said, let's go camp. Let's do some camping. I guess I don't know what possessed me to do this. So I got a nice lounge, Chase lounge chair and put it into the front bedroom, which is the original bedroom. Then brought her bed in. And now from that original bedroom was only one bathroom for the entire house with a shower and real small, cozy, tiny bathroom. There was a closet that was like a lengthways closet, like a longways closet, to just a small door opens and it's a closet. So I laid my, I got her all to bed. I, you know, got her all snuggled and I got laid on the lounge chair and finally got to sleep. I had shut the door, but I didn't lock it. There wasn't a lock on the door. There was no need to have a lock on the door. And I laid there and without warning of any type, I was literally ripped out off that lounge chair and like a rag doll and whatever it was proceeded to throw me around the house and around that room. Things were broken. I was thrown into the bathroom. I broke. There was a ceramic like hand on the bathroom in the bathroom near the shower for towels. And I was slammed against that. Now, all this time, I'm certain that there's somebody in the house, but there wasn't. There was nothing. And it wasn't so much that I could actually feel hands. I could just feel this force. And it threw me into the bathroom. As I said, I broke that ceramic, towel holder, bruised ribs. I was bruised everywhere. The whole room looked like an earthquake or a tornado hit it. Things were toppled over. I had a drafter's desk, which was turned over. And if you know anything about drafter's desks, they are heavy. They are heavy. My dog was yelping at the same time. Now this is in the middle of the night. It's not even daylight yet. So, but the only light that was visible for me was the street light that was outside. So it shone a little bit through the blind. Now, again, I'm still getting thrown around. I got tossed into that closet that I just mentioned and pulled out by my ankles, still trying, and I'm screaming. My dog is yelping. So whatever is happening to her, I don't know. Clothes. I had armoire, you know, those portable ones where I had clothes there. Those were all pulled out. Drawers were pulled. Things were broken. I kept trying to get out the bedroom door, screaming and crying. And of course, no neighbors are going to hear me. And I'm trying to open the door and it would not budge. It would not budge. It would not budge. I mean, I couldn't get this no matter how I tried. As it started to get daylight, the sun started to rise. My roommate came home and knocked on the door. Tony, are you in there? And I'm like, yes, yes, I can't get the door open. He just opened the door just like that. And when he looked in the room, he said, what happened? And I proceeded to tell him. I was attacked. But here was what I didn't understand. I didn't know before I bought the house. Neighbor across the street had told me, prior to me living there and prior to me owning that house, she mentioned that she started to give me in detail what the house had looked like prior to. And she also said that she and a group of other people committed a whole lot of unsavory acts in that house. So whatever it was trapped in that room. And that was the only time I had ever, ever stayed in that room. And here's another thing. My dog would never even go near the threshold of that bedroom after that.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't even go near it. And it was horrible for me because I would just have so much anxiety just to go to use the restroom or go in the shower. And I'd leave doors all open and shades or whatever out there. It would only be daytime and I would be in there just as fast as I could be done with whatever I needed to do. But that's what happened there. And I mean, I was bruised. As I said, my ribs were bruised. The room was just tore up. It was an absolute attack. physically, but I've never gotten the scratches. I've never gotten I've never heard the three knocks or anything like that. I've never gotten the three scratches on my body. I've never got heard the knocks, but whatever it was angry.
Now, do you believe that maybe you can move a spirit on with you? You can carry that spirit from one house to the next?
I do believe you can have an attachment,
Or
yes.
do you think this was a totally different?
I think whatever it was angry. Whatever these people were doing, because I know one was, like I said, it was an unsavory accent. I thought if I would have known that, I never would have bought this house.
Because I know a spirit can they pick and choose who they want to connect with, you know, and sometimes a spirit will only contact a certain individual and contact any other person on the team, you know, because they can relate to that one person, or there's multiple reasons, you know,
Yeah, our energy.
energy, like you were saying, you know, that house or the land, something happened there, something definitely happened there to keep that spirit there.
I'm not quite sure what this might be, but what that where that particular experience or encounter was. But I have my feeling about it that whatever it was angry that whatever the neighbors were doing at one time in that house was no longer being conducted. I don't know. I don't know.
You're talking about your insomnia, sleepwalking.
And
You think maybe somewhere along the line there's a connection there between the hauntings and the insomnia?
well, I didn't always have insomnia. But I, as a child, I had after that first episode, that first encounter, I became a sleepwalker. This is what I've learned from that is that when you're sleepwalking, you're very vulnerable to spirits, and that's why it's so dangerous. My grandmother and my mother used to have to put locks up on the doors at the very top, those slide locks, just so I wouldn't get out, and because they would find me in the oddest places sleeping. When I was really little, probably right around four-ish, after that first encounter, my mother had bought me a little tiny bracelet for my ankle that had like itty bitty little bells on it that that would at least make some kind of noise, so she would know where I was walking in the house. But I quit sleepwalking maybe at age, I don't know, age 10 or 11, and then it started up again. It started up again in that house, in that second house. And in that second house, I would just remember this very vividly because in my mind's eye, I seen a big explosion of fire. And I was, instead of running away from the fire, I was running into the fire, thinking I was going to save somebody. People say that you're not supposed to remember things of what you saw when you're sleepwalking, but that time I did. And I unfortunately slammed into one corner of the door jamb and got a big goose egg on my forehead, but that didn't stop me. I turned around and ran, and I mean ran in a full run and slammed into another one, and that finally woke me up. Since then, I don't remember having any other sleepwalking episodes. Now my insomnia is more because I have very odd sleep hours. For that, if I have nightmares or bad dreams, I'm going to be up. I do my best work in the middle of the night, even though I might have 4 hours sleep, 3 hours, you know what that is like, or 8 hours sleep. But, another thing that I had learned is that from 3 a.m. to 4 a.m., and I didn't even really know this, I used to call it the witching hour, and I always just thought it was that, and that's actually what it's referred to, is when the veil between our world and the supernatural is thinnest, and those are usually the times when you would see things. And I've had more visuals. I've had one entity come and visit me twice as an adult. I mean, this was 3 years ago. I've had a couple in this house. And this house is only 5 years old. The previous house was only 5 years old, but it was across the street from a cemetery. I never think of it like that. I'll tell you, first time I went into my cousin's house, I went into her bathroom, and she has a Victorian house. And I used the restroom and I started to feel a little anxious. And I said, I spoke her name and said, somebody died in this house. And she goes, how did you know that? I go, because I could feel him. And I said, it's a him. And I could feel him in the bathroom. I go, I don't think he was bad, but I could feel him. And sure enough, she said, I got to tell you, she goes, I'll go ahead and tell you. She goes, yeah, a doctor had died in the kitchen of that house, had a heart attack. And I could feel him. And she's like, how did you know? I go, I could feel him.
You're like an empath, you know. But before we get off here, I want to get into the your book. So what's the book about? Is it about your first encounter?
Yeah, actually, it's going to be an entire, as much as I can write about every single encounter, because I've had probably a dozen or more in my lifetime. I'm trying to do it chronologically as it happened and just add every story. Some are not, you know, nothing is as lengthy as the first encounter, because
your first encounter, like,
no, it's going to be every one of them. You know, it's going to be every one of them. I, you know, as I mentioned before, I've seen a shadow figure in this house. I see one in the previous house we owned before this one. And a small entity just appeared in the middle of the night as I was sitting on the couch near the fireplace, a very small entity in this. And at that moment, I froze and just jumped up and started turning on lights. Well, my husband had laid down in our guest bedroom and fell asleep. So I went ahead and went into bed. And this was another night. This was on another time, another night, probably less than a week later. And then I was laying there and I didn't realize my husband wasn't in there. And I could feel that it's that energy, that the energy changes. And I just opened my eyes, and I always sleep with the TV on. I have to have some sort of background, some sort of light. I can't not have sound or some light. I won't sleep in a house that's pitch black. I want to know what's in front of me. And the hallway had a light on, but the door was just not even half closed. And my TV was on, and I just opened my eyes, and as you probably know, it's one of those you're startled. And there was that same little entity on my husband's side peeking over the bed at me. Same exact thing, same exact thing. And I looked at him, and he looks, they have kind of a, this one particular one was small, probably 2.5 feet, you know, something like that, less than 3 feet. And some would say maybe it was a child. I don't know. Maybe it was wanted me to help him. Maybe it came from the graveyard across the street. I don't know. But it's still very unsettling. And, you know, it was very easy to see his face, or I want to say his. I still feel like that one was a little boy too. But it's kind of an X-ray, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. They're luminous. But they have, it's almost X-ray facial features. It's not like you and I can see each other in a solid form. It's not quite like that.
Like almost like a hologram type of.
Yes.
It's like a hologram type of apparition.
Yes.
It's hard to explain, you know.
No, I think we understand each other here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And at the first time I saw him near the fireplace, I was just sitting there writing on my laptop. And I just, and this is in the middle of the night, probably between three and four. And I just looked over at the fireplace, and Mary was standing there just looking at me, and I just jumped up. I'm like, oh Lord, no. Okay. So I get up, I jump up, and this thing just merely just turned around and walked right into the wall, right through the wall. I couldn't see his entire arms or legs, but you could tell that his body turned. And then it visited me again when my husband was in the other room and just was peeking over staring at me, peeking over the side of the bed. And I just ripped off the blankets, like, okay, it's time to get up. I've never spoken to a spirit. I don't ever want to. From my understanding, that's just the same as invitation. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I don't need any more spirits hanging around me or coming by and wanting to talk. So paranormal activity picked me at 4 years old, for all I know prior to that, and just waited for me to be old enough to acknowledge.
Well, I'll tell you what, when your book comes out, I want to have you back on the show.
I would love that.
promote your book, have you on there, talk about it, and a few more things we didn't get to today. Appreciate you coming on and sharing your stories. It took courage, and I wish you the best of luck with your book and everything else going on.
Thank you so much.
I would like to thank Tony Shapiro for coming on the show today. It takes a lot of courage to come on the show and talk about traumatizing event that happened in your life when you were only 4 years old, and then to have multiple events happen after that. Thank you, Tony, for sharing your experiences and your story. Stay tuned on the next episode. I have a special announcement. I'm really excited about that. I'll see you in 2 weeks with Ghost in the Valley podcast.